record here. And then I have to do this statement thing. The key objective of this interview is to serve as a research tool to document memories of the American chestnut in the southern Appalachian region. Information obtained in these interviews will be retained and made available for further use in efforts to promote a better understanding of the role of the American chestnut in Appalachian culture. So then I have to ask, have you signed the participant agreement and the participant identification and release agreements?
Yes, I have.
All right. Okay, so the first thing I've been doing is just asking people to state your name, when you were born, where you grew up, that kind of stuff.
All right, my name is Bob Cornett, and I was born in Hazard, Kentucky, in the mountains in 1929. And I lived in town, and therefore I was not out in the woods much. But and therefore, I didn't really know the chestnut tree. It was gone before I really could remember. But people my age who were out in the woods, country people, do remember it. And there were lots of conversation about it, and my dad, vividly remember my dad talking about it. I remember tears coming to his eyes when he would think about the chestnut and all it meant to him, and then know it was gone. I guess that was the limit of my understanding of it. I knew it had been important to the older people, but I didn't fully understand why, because I was a town boy instead of a country boy. And I got back into this, I got into the Chestnut Project itself because an educator friend of mine, Fay King, principal of the Stanton Elementary School in Stanton, Kentucky, observed that the chestnut restoration could be an extremely powerful way to help connect schools with their communities, help get young people and older people involved in doing something useful. Faye understood, even though she's a good bit younger than I am, she's probably 15 years younger than I am, but she understood the significance, understood the hold that the chestnut tree had on the mountain people. And so she knew that this would grab people's interest. Excuse me a second.
Sure. It was, or why do you think it would grab people's attention, or was like sort of a cultural symbol?
Well, the older people, even those that are not old enough to remember it, remembered hearing about it. They heard their grandparents and parents talking about it. There were still chestnut evidences of chestnuts around. There were chestnut fences, chestnut boards to look at. There were still chestnut trees around, dead trees that most of them had seen as young people. So the folklore, they knew about it, the word of mouth, they knew about it. And they knew the hold it had on the people who were alive when the chestnut was there. They'd heard stories about fattening the hogs and and eating the chestnuts in the wintertime.
So was did your dad grow up more out in the country?
Yes.
That's why he remembered it? Where did he grow up?
Near Hazard.
Okay. Do you remember any specific stories that he told?
I don't guess I do. I don't guess I have those stories in mind. I think the only thing I really vividly remember is how important the trees were to him and how sad he was that they were gone. Mm. And my interest in the project came from the fact that hold that the tree had on people was well understood by a lady who's probably the finest educator I've ever known, and that's Faye. And she wanted to get involved with the American Chestnut Foundation in order to help connect it with the community she did. She and I did get involved and got acquainted with Rex Mann and helped form this Kentucky chapter of the American Chestnut Foundation. And we did so for the purpose of using the Chestnut Project as a community building tool. And we went up to Lion Fork, up to the Kingdom Come School, and found a kindred soul in that school principal, Betty Caudill. Mm. And she jumped on it. She understood it too, even though she had married into the mountain. She was a Kansas native, but she understood the importance of the chestnut up there. She got the fire department involved. She asked the fire department, volunteer fire department, to go out and take the kids out to interview the old people, to get the story recorded, make videotapes, and I loaned you that copy of that. But they also started a chestnut festival. Huh. And as far as I know, that was the first chestnut festival ever started. They had it at the school. The school and the volunteer fire department together.
When
sponsored.
Did that happen?
I believe that was 5 years ago. I believe that 4.5 years ago. I believe the one coming up, the fall, this they're going to have it this fall. I believe this is the fifth one.
Wow.
They had it at the school, and the school is. Well, Betty Caudill became ill with breast cancer and fought it for a long time, finally died a little over a year ago. Hmm. And without her there to protect the school, it was closed.
So they don't have it anymore?
But they're going to have to go right on.
Oh.
That's the real significance to me of the Chestnut Project as a way to build community. Ordinarily, it would have stopped when the school stopped, but they had the community involved. They had the firemen involved and others. It was a community project to begin with, not a school project, or at least not merely a school project.
Mm-hmm.
So last fall, they didn't have the school building because it was closed, but they had the festival, had it at the fire station. And while they were at it, they just added a bluegrass music festival to it and added homecoming for the Kingdom Come Settlement School. So they had three things going at the same time.
Wow.
And it was quite an event, quite a success. And that, in turn, the fact that they succeeded at that, gave them the confidence to go after getting the building, the school building, in the hands of the community, so that they could use it as a community education center, and they now have it. They went to the legislature, and they're going to be taking possession of the building July 1st.
Great.
And they will have a whole bunch of things in there that, if all goes well, that there will be a forestry education center in there. Hmm. There will be a component of Lily Cornick Woods in there with Eastern Kentucky University being involved. There will be a daycare facility for the little kids. It will be a community co-op, not something that the government runs, but something that the community runs.
Mm.
And there will be things like gardens and chestnut trees. There will be, well, and all kinds of things that have to do with the community. They might have a herd of goats out there.
Do you think it's more difficult or less difficult or more important, less important to do that kind of a project in like rural Appalachia, eastern Kentucky than it is in other places? Or?
I think that kind of thing is extremely important anywhere. However, I think it's more doable in eastern Kentucky and the mountains generally than it is in more urban settings. They're more nearly self-reliant. There's more self-reliance left in the mountains. They're less dependent on the government, aside from the welfare sort of stuff we hear about. But when a job needs to be done, they do it the way they did in the old days. Mm-hmm. If a barn needs to be built, they just get together and build it, or did, and there is an element of that left.
Yeah.
And yes, that's what I think we've got to build on up there.
Yeah.
I think this, and I, if... if my dream holds up, and my guess is that it will, and Rex and I share this, there will be community projects going on all over the Mountain Chestnut Range from Georgia to Maine, where you will have people cultivating chestnuts, cultivating small garden plot sizes of 5 or 10 or 15 trees, and getting them big enough that they can sustain themselves without having to be tended to. And if you've got them every 2 or 3 miles apart, then they'll repopulate the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And we need the people to come together voluntarily to get them started, protect them from the deer, and
yeah.
See that they get watered if you have a drought, and otherwise treat them like a garden crop. And I think that's doable. I know they will. I've seen enough up there to know how. Well, there will be one of those plots, and we need a name for them, I guess. We don't have. There'll be one of those there at that school. Those mm-hmm. kids will be tending the chestnut. Those little kids will be tending to the chestnut trees. So, yes, I think it's doable in the mountains, and I think it will lead to all kinds of things. There will, for example, probably be a old-fashioned post office in that building, school building, as a direct result of the Chestnut Project. The Postal Service wanted to close the post office, which is right across the street from the school, right across the road. But some retired postmasters from around the state, including one in Louisville, want to see an old-fashioned post office in that school.
Mm-hmm.
So they've gone to bat on behalf of saving that post office. Now, they haven't won that battle yet, but I expect they will, and you'll have people coming to the post office to talk to each other the way they used to do.
Yeah.
There is a major community-building effort afoot. Not effort, that's the wrong word. Momentum. It's there, and it came from the love of that chestnut tree.
Do you think it was, like, it would have been... Or why do you think chestnut is the vehicle for this community building? Why not like another tree or another?
Well, something? I don't guess there's anything else up there that has had the historic significance. Well, for one thing, that tree, those the people who did remember it or remembered hearing about it as I did, it was. Well, 40, I believe I've heard Rex and some readings, I believe the reading has said that somewhere around 40% of the trees in the mountains were chestnuts. They were the dominant tree up there.
Yeah.
I know of nothing else in nature that had that kind of hold on them, that had that kind of significance.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big, big deal to the people that lived out in the country, lived off the land. This was before the time that you went to work in a coal mine or went off to Detroit and got a job in a car factory. This was pre-industrial. People lived in the mountains 100 years ago very much the way they did 500 years ago. This was a pre-industrial society, you know. So,
mm-hmm.
So the natural things around were enormously important. It's all they had. They lived in harmony with nature.
Yeah, it is so wild to think about. Like, my grandmother was born in 1924, and so she's about 87, or no, she's like 84, no, yeah, she's like 84. And it is crazy how much has changed in her lifetime, like the way she was raised to the way I was raised.
Where was your grandmother raised?
On Kingdom Come Creek.
Right there.
Yeah.
Okay, well now, is she still living, you say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And still got good memories?
She's got some pretty good memories.
I bet she remembers the chestnut tree.
I think she does, yeah. She remembers, I think she said she was like she was in her early, like 13, 14 kind of age when she remembers the blight. But yeah, she remembers gathering them up with her brother and stuff like that. So yeah, I need to interview her about it. I haven't interviewed her yet. But,
well,
it is amazing. Good.
Where does she live?
She still lives right in that house she was raised at,
okay, so
on Kingdom Come Creek.
Does she live by herself? Mm-hmm. Go spend a little time with her. She'll be a great at it, and her memory's still good.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say good, but it's not bad. She's kind of in between.
It's
pretty good.
There's wonderful history up there, mm-hmm. and that lady will. I catch myself when I was a boy. Those kids out in the country always envied us in town. We had things they didn't have, movie theaters and pool rooms and so on. But the truth is, they had a better deal than we did. And I feel a little bit deprived not being out there. For, I was part of that industrial world that was dominating the town I lived in. It was a coal mining town. Mm-hmm. But out in the country, people my age still, many of them lived the way... Really, you can't tell. I read a book not so long ago about a village in England in about 1450, or maybe 1500, but 500 years ago in round figures. And you couldn't tell the difference between what the pattern of living there then and the pattern out in the country, in the mountains.
That's amazing.
When I was a child. Mm-hmm. So,
let's see. So the way I have this thing kind of organized is first I've been asking people about their memories of what they remember of. Do you remember anything about the blight?
No.
When the blight came through?
No. All I can remember is that there were some dead chestnut trees around, and people were all torn up about it. Mm-hmm. That's really all I remember. Mm-hmm. My dad and others that really, really lived with them, and I didn't. See, my daddy brought home a paycheck from the railroad.
Oh, I see.
He didn't live by going out in the woods and collecting chestnuts and turning hogs loose to get fat and doing all the other things that the country people did. He had grown up that way, but I didn't.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay, well, I guess what I'm curious about to hear from you is just about the Chestnut as a community building effort. I guess, can you just tell me the story of how you got, I guess you told me a little bit of it already, but how you got involved with the restoration effort and why you think it's important, just what your thoughts are on that.
Well, that's largely what we were talking about at yesterday when I was in Dayton, Ohio, at the Kettering Foundation meeting. I'm personally convinced that we're going to be having to go back to some of this simpler living that we did a long time ago. There's all kinds of reasons for that. One of them is that the quality of the food that we're getting out of that industrial set of processes is not near as good as the food we had, the grandma had that used to eat when you grew it. But people have to be involved with the decisions in their communities, or there's not really a democracy. When we just turn our government over to experts, we've done things to ourselves that are pretty serious. And I won't try to get into political science lectures, but we're not running our government anymore, as my friend at the Kettering Foundation, David Matthews, says. We're supposed to own the store. We're not customers of government. We're supposed to own the store. And we've forgotten that. And we've got to get back to it. And the only way to get back to it, really, is to care about what goes on right around us. Mm-hmm. Get involved in what goes on right around us. Not just hire somebody to do it, but do it. That's, as we were discussing, that attitude is still present in the mountains. More than in just about anywhere else. It's present in rural areas generally. Mm-hmm. but it's more prevalent in the mountains than anywhere else in the country that I know about. And so, yes, I think we can be, I think that with the help of that Chestnut Project, the Chestnut Restoration, I think we can be a beacon, be an example for the whole rest of the country on how to take control of their lives back again.
Mm-hmm.
So this, from my point of view, is a great... I've been watching governments for close up for 50 years and more.
Was that what your career was, or...?
Well, that's what my career was,
yeah.
Basically.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you work in Frankfurt or something?
I did. I left Frankfurt when I when I left Berea College. And I went to work in Frankfurt in a new little organization attached to the governor's office, State Budget Division. So I was all of 21 years old working on state finances with
Kelly.
And the guys I was working with were older heads. They were all up to maybe 25 or 26 or 7 years old. But we were going to save the world. We didn't quite get it done, though. Some of it went unsaved. But yes, I've been around government a long time. And I think I know the difference between what governments can usefully, effectively do and what they can't do. And raising kids is not something that the government does well. We need to do that.
Mm.
And every educator I know agrees with that, by the way. And every grandparent I know agrees with that. There was a story I'm fond of telling about a visit last fall when I was up at the fire department at Gordon, the volunteer fire department that took over the Chestnut Festival. I was there. This was on Saturday, October 19th, if I remember my date right. And they were having, this was about noon. And they had a bluegrass band on the stage, and people were dancing, and it was a happy occasion. One of the firemen came up and whispered to me, says, "Bob, we have an emergency. Would you kind of look after this bluegrass thing, keep it going while we're gone?" And I says, "Why, sure, but what's the emergency?" He says, "Well, a coonhound has fallen in a mountain break." That's those crevices that come when the coal mines cave in.
Mm-hmm.
And the dog fell through, 40 or 50 feet deep, and they needed help getting the dog out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, it didn't even occur to him not to go. It didn't occur to him to go to the telephone book and try to find the government agency in charge of rescuing coonhounds. They just went to do it. And it turned out they came back after a while. It was, without getting it done, they said that it was too far down for their rope. And they were going to have to get a more experienced rope guy. But they had one coming. One of their buddies from somewhere was coming. And at the time I left, by the end of the day, they still hadn't gotten it out, but they called me that night. I got a call at 10:30 that night when I got back home. I was worn out. The fireman just wanted to make sure I knew that they'd got the dog out and it was all right. Now, if it'd been Lexington or Chattanooga, they'd still be looking for the government agency in charge of coonhounds. That spirit's up there, and that's what I think can be mobilized. I think it is. I think that's a perfect example. We've got school buildings all over the mountains that are empty from consolidation.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier for a government agency to build a big school to put people in. It's easier for a hog farmer to build a big hog barn, too, or a cattle feeding operation to get bigger and bigger and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of the same attitudes are in place. But in this case, that building would be just another one of the abandoned school buildings. happens, and that would be just another sign of a demoralized community.
Mm-hmm.
But it's working exactly in the opposite direction. They are taking control of themselves, taking control of their lives up there, and it's a direct result of that little bit of work they did with the school on the Chestnut Project. It showed them that they could do it and do something that mattered. There's a club up there. Rex probably told you. He and I went up to the community college at Cumberland. They call it Southeast Community College.
Oh, yeah.
And they formed a club. They've had it for a while, of high school and middle school kids. The college is kind of helping sponsor it, mm-hmm. encouraging the kids to get equipped to go to college. But they're taking on the Chestnut Project as Chestnut Restoration. But just all kinds of things are coming together, because they're going to get that tree back.
Yeah.
And
do you think that they're wanting to get the tree back because they think that they'll turn hogs out to feed on it like they did? Or what motivates them?
I don't think they're thinking that way. Just the notion of doing something to strengthen their community, to make life better, that's probably about as far as they can go.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there will be a little bit of money to be made with the Chestnuts, I think. We talked a little about it. They can go in the woods now, if they want to, and bring those sprouts in. And put them in pots and sell them at farmers markets.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they won't live long. They'll live, 8 or 10 years? But a lot of people would like to do that. And even when they die, they'll have sprouts coming back. So,
mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of people that would like to participate in the restoration project that way. So, yes, mm-hmm. they can make some money with it. Although that's not really what's motivating it. It's just more of a sense of civic obligation and civic pride. Makes them proud of themselves.
Yeah. Do you think it has something to do with being nostalgic or sentimental about the Chestnut? Or?
Well, I guess that's part of it. However, it seems to me that just the connection between the generations is probably really the key to it.
Mm-hmm.
This connects the older people with the younger ones in an effective, natural kind of way. And without that connection, the kids are disconnected. Excuse me.
Sure. What motivates the people? And whether it's connecting the generations.
I think that may well be the, if you had to pick out one thing in this, that may well be the heart of it.
Mm.
That's a natural connection.
Mm-hmm.
And we've done things to disconnect that. The way we've been handling schooling, moving the school off to where it belongs in the, it's under the control of state government or some county office, not the neighbors, not mm-hmm. the community. That separates. So, and a lot of other things have done to cause the separation. You don't have kids out there planting a garden with grandparents anymore, or with the adults. And that connection, I guess that is the single most key piece of this.
Mm-hmm.
That's what ties it. That's the glue. If there's one piece of glue, that's it. It's the generation connection.
Mm. Do you think, it seems, so one thing that's kind of interesting to me is that, so we've got this hybrid tree, and we're going to plant it out in this grid system, say, but the reality is it's going to be, most of the people associated with the Chestnut Foundation are like older, retired people who have these memories from their father, or folks like that, who they have this sort of nostalgia remembering, their dad talk about chestnuts or whatever it was. And but the reality is that who's going to be like caring for these trees in 50 years or 100 years? Mm-hmm. It's going to have to be younger people, right?
Yeah.
But why are the they're not invested in it in that same way that the older people are. So.
Well, they're not in the trees. They if nothing were done, the tree could pass, and the next generation, the people that are your age or younger would barely know. That'd be just something they read about in history books, like other things that are long gone. But this connection makes it real for the kids too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. That's
good. And now that is one of the things that happens to older people. They really are different from people in the prime of, in the prime money making years, career years. We just have a different set of values. And the kids matter. Mm-hmm. That's, it's just, it's a delight to see kids out there getting turned on by trees.
Mm-hmm. So, do you think it's more important to the adults, or why is it important for kids to have those, connections? What does that do for them?
Well, I guess maybe a way to go at it is what they don't learn if they don't have connections with adults that care about them. And if they merely go off to school and merely learn what they learn by sitting in a line with the teacher telling them stuff and them learning how to spout it back, if that's all they learn, they're missing the context. They're missing what life's about. It's a very, very narrow thing that was naturally part of growing up a long time ago. They were naturally part of a family. They were included. There wasn't any separation of generations. There wasn't any separation of kids of different ages. You had kids, 10-year-old kids and 5-year-old kids together. That's the natural way things were done. And we've done a lot of unnatural things to disconnect, to take that, to lose some of that. The older people, I now know, regret the fact that that's lost, that they've lost something. The older people have lost that connection with the young ones. They don't like that. It's not the way it's supposed to be. It's not in the DNA to be that way. You're supposed to pass these things on. Now, do kids benefit from it? Yes, they absolutely do. There's a book right here I mentioned to you that David Matthews at the Kettering Foundation referred me to. The Singing Neanderthals. Now he's talking. That book's talking about little children, really even infants.
Wow.
But the natural connection that occurs between an infant and an adult, the baby talk kind of thing,
uh-huh.
Responding to the child, responding to the smile,
that's
a partnership between the little one. And in fact, there's even some technical terminology they use. Infant-directed speech. They're learning language, even when they can't speak, the gestures, the smiles, the rhythm, the body movements. That's all part of growing up. And I guess I think being having children around older people is part of it too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's
just
important.
It's just part of it. And there is a difference between the older people, a non-judgmental kind of a thing that goes with them. We're not trying to control them. We're perfectly content to help them. We're on their side. Mm-hmm. Parents frequently are not on the side of the kid. Mm-hmm. You know, parents have got notions about what the kids are supposed to do. Yeah. Grandparents don't really have that. Yeah.
Do you have grandchildren, I guess?
Do I have any? Oh, yeah, I've got a whole passel of them. I've got two grandkids next door.
Oh, great.
I've got a bunch more within 5 miles, so.
Good. All right. So what are you doing at your bluegrass festival here? Tell me about your bluegrass festival. Are you doing something about chestnuts there?
No.
Okay. That hurt.
No, we're not doing anything particular about chestnuts this year. We would if there were.
Have you in the past?
We've had an exhibit, the Chestnut Foundation guys. Rex is a great bluegrass fan. Some of the others are. Have you met Mike French?
No, but I have his name. I want to go. I guess he's living in Paintsville or something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to try to go talk to him when I'm in around Whitesburg in a couple weeks.
Yeah, that would not be too far out of your way. But Mike's, of course, he finished his degree. His master's at UK, I guess. Well, I guess it was probably at the end of December, just recently. But they're working him to death, planting trees. Not necessarily chestnuts, but just planting them on a big, big scale, thousands a day or some such. Well, I don't know what I was going to tell you about. Oh, he's a bluegrass music fan. I need to get him some tickets now that I think of it. There'll be a bunch of the Chestnut guys at the festival, and then, but we will. We won't have, unless somebody wants to put an exhibit in there, and we still might not be too late to do it, but probably won't. They probably won't get around to having an actual exhibit this year. And Rex being a little bit worried about his health is a big problem,
too. Bad,
We'll do some things about this community piece of it. We've got some scholars, some educators, teachers as well as professors, students of education, coming to have a discussion about this whole issue of I would focus mostly on how to use music to make these community connections.
So how did you get so interested in community development and stuff?
Well, I don't know. I guess maybe as much as anything else, but having been on the inside of bureaucracies for so long, I came to see clearly the limitations on what can be done from inside a government agency. And there are things that just simply have to be done by people, not by institutions.
Yeah.
And connecting with young people is certainly one of them.
So do you think that the Chestnut Restoration Project can be done by government agencies or not?
No, I don't.
Why not?
I don't. Well, it would be too massive for one thing. I don't see the money to do it. With enough money, they could go out there and you could hire Forest Service employees and go plant chestnuts. But that's not really an efficient way to go at it. What Rex is talking about is his plans far and away the better way just from an efficiency point of view to get it done. Mm-hmm. But if we did it that way, there would be nothing left when you get finished except chestnut trees. There wouldn't be all these other things that are taking place on Line Fork as a byproduct of it. There wouldn't be the daycare program there wouldn't be the chestnuts outside for the kids to help nurture. There wouldn't be a bunch of guys going to rescue coon hounds. There wouldn't be a school building in use in a vibrant way. It would just the whole set of things that offer a good promise of transforming that community in a positive way would mm-hmm. not have happened.
What do you think were some of the reasons why a community like Lime Fork or other communities got to be so disconnected? Like, what do you think it was, the industrialization, or when did that change happen and why did it happen?
Well, the profound change, there really is a profound difference in the way people live today and the way they lived. Well, I had an aunt die just a few months ago at age 102. She hadn't seen an automobile until she was 15 years old or so, living in an isolated section of Leslie County in this game. They lived entirely off, well, almost entirely, off the land and from each other. These were pretty well self-contained. They didn't buy much from outside. Mm-hmm. Didn't have money to buy it anyhow. But it was this was a cooperative way of living. This was a real community.
Mm-hmm.
They helped each other. That was the whole culture. They wouldn't have made it otherwise. And now you look at the situation now, how you live, how I live, for that matter. We go get a paycheck somewhere else, turn ourselves, go to Ford Motor Company or go somewhere and get on a payroll and then buy everything. Don't know the guy that produced it. Don't need to know. I only barely know my neighbor two doors over.
Hmm.
I'm not particularly proud of that fact, but he's selling his house. He's lived there 7 or 8 years, and I nod to him when I see him, but I don't think I've ever had a real conversation with him. Now that, we don't need each other.
Hmm.
And I think that's the fundamental change, is farming it out. Everything we do, we farm out somebody else. And that, we're not going to be able to drive as far to do that with $4 gasoline or $5, but I think we're headed back. We're headed back to where Wendell Berry told us 40 years ago that we need to go.
Mm-hmm.
We're now taking him seriously.
Yeah.
I saw it this morning at the farmer's market. The difference in the atmosphere at that farmer's market in Lexington and the atmosphere when you go to Kroger's is the difference in daylight and dark. And the quality of the food is profoundly different.
Mm-hmm.
The taste and the quality, the nutritional value of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is a really difference.
We're going back to the future, as somebody put it.
In what way are you involved in the chestnut restoration effort? I know you've told me, so you've done some community building kind of work. Is that the main way that you're involved? Or have you planted any trees yourself? Or
No.
No, you've just been
I haven't been out planting trees. And by the way, I will, now that Rex has got me thinking of it as a garden thing. The chestnut trees really aren't native right here in this area. But it wouldn't really have been particularly appropriate to have something that would grow up to be a chestnut tree here. But a garden with some chestnuts that would be for the purpose of producing sprouts for later on, just to keep that seed stock alive in case something goes haywire on the main experiment. And Rex reminds me that there could be another blight come along, or that blight could mutate, in which case it would be nice to have sprouts coming on.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll probably get a few chestnut trees around here. But no, the... I don't know the tree. I would barely know it if I saw it in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
I have been out with the foresters and let them show me, but then I forget. this other piece of it's really about all that I can contribute.
So you're mainly interested in the community building aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I don't have a lot of that. So do you think, or what will be important? You've like heard about the restoration effort, like you understand the science basically, and how they're going to do this grid thing that Rex has told you about.
Yeah.
So do you think that it'll be successful?
Oh, sure. Looks like it's far enough along. I did go by that farm one day, the farm, the experimental farm.
In Meadowview, Virginia?
Near Abingdon, yeah.
Yeah.
But, as far as I can tell from what those guys tell me, there's no real reason to doubt that the project will succeed.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have chestnuts back again. And
so, What do you think the role of the chestnut will be in the 21st century as opposed to what it was in the 20th century or the 19th century?
Oh my goodness. The purpose of the tree out there growing. Well, I don't guess I know what will be happening. I'm thinking about the mountains mostly, where the tree was native and where it will be coming back. In that coal mining country, the coal's going to eventually run out. And they're going to need to go back to living from the land, at least those that stay in the mountains. And there will, as far as I can tell, be fewer jobs to commute off to.
Mm-hmm.
So taking care of themselves, providing their own for their own livings is going to be more important than it was. This industrial revolution as we've known it is going to take on a different form. We've about run its course on using oil anyway, and coal's not going to last forever, certainly not in Eastern Kentucky. So that's going to put you back to where you either move out or you live on what's there.
Mm-hmm.
And you live on what's there by respecting it, understanding it. And, the tree, I would suspect that we'll find people harvesting chestnuts and eating them.
Mm-hmm.
Probably won't be turning pigs loose, but they may do that.
Mm-hmm.
And trees generally, they'll be treating, if all goes well, they'll be treating forests not as something you go mine, and that's how they dealt with the forests up here when they first came in. It wasn't any real different from mining coal. It was something that was there, one mm-hmm. shot, you go get it, you move on. That, I hope, is not what happens. I hope they see it as a sustainable part of their livelihood.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they will. But yes, they're going to be living a whole lot more like they did a long time ago. And I think it'll be better.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you have any like concerns or hopes or fears about the restoration process and how it'll work, or any thoughts on like that?
Well, just getting organized to this is a massive task.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And by the way, the internet will make it, will facilitate it. A whole lot of people will be able to communicate, they'll be able to see each other's projects.
Yeah.
And have you ever used those webcams?
No, I never have.
Well, I barely have, but you know, you can see. You have a camera aimed at you, and the people on the other end can see you.
Yeah.
You can aim that camera at your tree or your garden or anything else, and people on the other end can see you, and you can see them and
Oh.
talk. And it's free. It's not like those, but maybe if you're willing to put up with a little bit of a lack of quality, it's free. And it's not like those teleconferencing things that the big businesses use, but it's perfectly adequate for, well, line four can communicate with somebody in Ohio or mm-hmm. Maine, for that matter. Now, I guess I'm betting that there will be a natural networking to take place. Because once patterns get started, it will be too slow to get started, and that by itself won't work. There will be a temptation and probably a necessity to do some top-down organizing.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess to the extent that I would have one overriding concern, it is that the top-down organizing, the need to do that, could actually get in the way of the community building job. We need both. But I think and I'm confident that we can get enough of the community building, enough of the real stuff done so that it won't get overwhelmed by the, well, Line Fork as a community is taking its own.
Mm-hmm.
It may well be that you'd want to, also, the Chestnut Foundation may want to make a deal with the National Rotary Club, just to pull a name out of a hat, and say, here, we'll get you guys to do this, have your chapter, your Rotary chapter in Whitesburg do this one.
Mm-hmm.
If you do that, they'll be planning, looking after Chestnuts, but they won't be looking at the other connections that could come as a result of it.
Uh-huh.
It won't be a full-fledged community project as it needs to be.
Right.
But that's I think that's correct. Well, that's one of the things we talked about up with the Kettering people yesterday.
Okay, so what were you going up there for? To raise money for something?
No, no. No, they don't put out money. They're the, I think that David Matthews, who's the president of that, is probably the best scholar in the country,
huh.
Best that I know of from the point of view of seeing how to really do the community building job from the genuine grassroots. This distinction between going out and doing it for them and having them do it. He understands as clearly, as more clearly than any other scholar that I know of in the country, and he's got some people on the staff up there to do. He, by the way, grew up in a little town in South Alabama, cotton and peanut country,
huh.
And his daddy was, or his granddaddy was the school superintendent in that little huh. county. So he grew up around there. But he ended up as president of the University of Alabama when he was just 32 years old, I think 32,
yeah.
About that. And had a distinguished career there, went to Washington as secretary of the Department of Health, Education, Welfare.
Hello.
Hello.
Y'all session's over. This is computer session.
Come over, grandson.
How you doing, Granddad?
Can't you turn some lights on?
No, we're just
hiding out in the dark.
This is grandson Roy Miller.
Hi.
Hey, Roy. Roy Miller.
And Grandma Jean.
Can't hear what these things are.
We're talking about chess.
It's a good thing to talk about.
Yeah.
Well, you just ignore me real quick. I'll
we're about done.
But they're doing research on this issue.
Okay.
And they like what they wanted to tie in with what we're doing down here. And we had the school superintendent from Henry County, Wendell Bailey's County.
Right.
And a couple of other school officials to go. So
the Chestnuts were just a little part of a bigger thing that y'all were talking about.
Yeah, the Chestnuts are just one tool.
What are the other tools that y'all have?
What are the other tools?
Yeah.
Well, bluegrass music's one. Farmers markets are one. Uh-huh. That was a beautiful sense of community over there this morning.
Mm-hmm.
There was some kids there. One of my friends who's a music teacher teaches the violin at North Lexington at an inner city school, black school. Huh. Had five kids there, little ones, playing the violin. Now, he'd have been a whole lot better off if he'd been playing bluegrass. I told him. But yeah, we'll have some bluegrass at farmers markets.
Uh-huh.
But young people will be growing some stuff, selling at farmers markets. There'll be a youth corner. So those things we talked about, and even getting to the point that there is an understanding of nutrition as a byproduct of this, so that can start combating that childhood obesity and diabetes. You know, there's a terrible problem.
Yeah.
And that's coming, I think, partly because people watch too sedentary, but part of it is that quality of food is just not as nutritious as it once was. We're not eating things that we need to eat.
Do you know anything about the nutrition of chestnuts or what?
I don't know about the chestnuts, the nutritional quality of them, but it would be great to know.
Yeah, I think they're pretty nutritious.
That would just make it a more glamorous project if there's real strong nutritional quality there, and I bet there is.
Yeah, there is. I think they're pretty starchy, but I think if we compared to other nuts, they have a lot of more like vitamins or whatever it is.
That'd be good. One of these days, by the way, they'll be able to sell chestnuts. Rex tells me that his daddy used to go to, Rex grew up in the western North Carolina mountains.
Uh-huh.
His daddy used to go to Washington, D.C. to sell chestnuts and moonshine.
Yeah, he told me that story. That is pretty wild.
We can go back to that.
Yeah. Yeah, Wendell Berry's daughter runs a winery, I think. Or owns a winery up around there somewhere. Well, is there anything, any other memories or stories you want to share about chestnuts before?
Well, let's see if I can think of anything else that might. I don't think about anything about chestnuts. I have gotten acquainted with those foresters and the fish and wildlife kinds of guys, the outdoor guys and gals. There's a lot of women in this, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's just a first-rate breeding person. There's more giving in them than there is in the corporate world.
Mm-hmm.
I like them. I like being around them. Unselfishness there.
Uh-huh.
And I've seen what happens with kids out there. I watched a little boy about 8 years old get up in one of those elevator trucks. What do they call them? They get in them. Where you, the telephone companies.
Oh, yeah, yeah, little bucket things.
Bucket truck. Watched that little boy get up there, and those foresters were just, well, he pollinated. He pollinates the chestnuts at age 8. And remembers it vividly. That'll be an experience he'll remember for the rest of his life. He was part of it. And that's the whole thing. This, we need to be participants in life, not spectators. And this is a beautiful way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't see any need to separate bluegrass music from chestnuts, by the way. We write a song about chestnuts, as they did.
Are there any other similarities between bluegrass music and chestnuts?
Do what?
What are some of the other similarities between bluegrass music and chestnuts?
What is it about the connection?
What are the connections?
Well, they you ought to. I think that song's on there.
Okay.
Listen to them sing that song, and you'll see. But having kids, a whole bunch of kids welcoming the chestnuts back. And one of these days, we just might pick a weekend and have a chestnut festival that all these participating communities can join in on by way of webcam. And they can all sing songs, but they can share their songs about the chestnut. It's just a matter of making a community celebration out of it. That would be where the music comes in. This is all just fun. And that's a unique piece of bluegrass music too, as opposed to country music or classical music. You go to a classical music concert and you just buy a ticket and you know just exactly what they're going to do, and they're real good at it, and they'll entertain you, and you'll go home. Bluegrass, well, what you're going to is entirely different from that. These people are all participants.
Mm-hmm.
It's a community participation thing. You'll see that at Cowan Creek. You did go before, you say?
Yeah, I've been a couple of times, and I'm actually going to... They're going to pay me to help be an assistant fiddle teacher this time.
They are?
Mm-hmm.
Now, are you a pretty good musician?
No. I mean, I can play... I don't play bluegrass, I play old time, but I'm definitely still learning. I mean, I've been playing for a couple of years, so I can, like, sometimes play along, keep up, but not always.
Let me get your mailing address.
Sure.
And phone number while I got you.
Yeah, how'd you get into all this festival stuff? How did you start?
How did we get started on the
festival?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. We just decided we wanted to have a festival. There's a story about that in... Here, let me see if this one.
Did you hear me?
Did you talk to me?
Yes, I said use the word I.
She said it wasn't we, it was me. Let's see. '67. Yeah, this would be a pretty good description for the festival.
Oh, okay.
We've got the festival all started, so just keep that thing. Let me get this. These things are slipping and sliding.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we got it. I'm going to turn this recorder off.